I'm Luke Gerges.
And I'm Poppy Reed.
And today we are joined by Ash Stoll, the CEO of Flighthouse, a creative studio and entertainment brand based in LA. With over 100 staff, they market some of the biggest artists in the world, including Miley Cyrus, Lil Nas X, and Doja Cat. Flighthouse is also the most followed brand on TikTok, with over 28 million followers. Ash, welcome.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
And we're here at Big Sound, so we're in Brisbane right now. Mm-hmm. This is where we met. How is your Big Sound so far?
It's been amazing. It's my first time in Australia. I got to pet a koala, a kangaroo, so honestly, I'm like ready to go now. I've checked off all the boxes. But it's been cool. Last night I went to check out some of the local artists and just got a little bit of a taste of the music down here, and it's been wonderful.
Are you liking what you're hearing from our local
acts?
Yes,
very, very different, but it's super, super interesting, and was loving what we were hearing.
How's it different?
I've never seen someone play a didgeridoo on stage in the States before.
That is materially different.
Yes, quite different.
And very Australian.
Yes.
Yep.
Amazing. Well, let's get into how you started Flighthouse, because I know it's under the Create Music Group, which is one of the fastest growing companies in the US. How did you become CEO and how did it start?
Yeah, so I started at Create about 8 years ago now. I was one of 10 employees at the time. What Create was doing was music video production for kids on Vine that wanted to become artists. So a little bit of all of the artist services for these kids that maybe shouldn't have really been musicians, but we tried. And then Create was really figuring out what they were as a company. They ended up getting rid of their whole production team within like a week and a half of me starting. There was no job description. There was no boss. There was just, hey, we like your vibe. Come figure out something that you can do here. And then one thing led to another. Because of our experience working with these like Vine kids and promoting them on like different, was Musical.ly at the time, we kind of were just in this space that had the crossover between influencer artists, music space, and like the early stages of TikTok. So we were working on a kid called Jacob Sartorius, who was the number one kid on Musical.ly at the time, and he, you know, tried his best, and he was a great, great kid, but he really opened our eyes to the potential that there was on the platform for music promotion. And so we'd acquired the Flighthouse page for, I think, like $10,000, had a million followers at the time.
Was it called Flighthouse when you bought it?
It was called Flighthouse.
Oh,
and
shit.
All it was I said this, like one of the first sound pages on the platform. So the kid who started it in K-Town in Los Angeles, he was 15. He was just uploading sped up versions of pop songs. And it got a following by all of the big Musical.ly creators, musers, using those audios and for their lip syncing videos.
I've never heard that term before, by the way.
Muser? Yes. Yeah. Yes, I like definitely. That. And then so after we kind of acquired it, we really just sat on it for a while. We knew that there was some kind of potential for how we could promote our, you know, the Create artists on the platform. Didn't really know what. Then about a year goes by, we don't do anything with it. That's when Musical.ly is about to transition into TikTok. So ByteDance had acquired it. And then, you know, everyone on the platform was a little bit concerned of what's going to happen to our following, to what we are, like what our platform is becoming. We were the fifth biggest page on the on Musical.ly and TikTok at the time. And our initial thought was, okay, let's try to take our audience off platform. We had 8 million followers then. Let's take kids from Musical.ly. So we got Sebastian Moy, Kristen Hancher, and Piper Raquel. And we made them like big budget reality type shows that we were gonna do on YouTube. So we weren't filming vertical, we were just filming standard landscape. And you know, that first year we lost $1 million or invested $1 million into experimenting with this big budget content. And you know, we saw that these kids were getting more views when they were just filming something from their iPhone, like during a break from these big sets that we were filming on. And that's when we were like, okay, this isn't working. We need to just keep trying some other stuff. We tried like the BuzzFeed style of content where, you know, I was in content testing stuff out. We had rappers filming like using an Easy Bake Oven and just like weird shit, like stuff like that. And it was, I think, August 2019. We went in that week, I think it was on a Friday, to the TikTok office. They were using like a shared workspace at the time still. And we kind of told them that we had this idea to film, you know, more premium, like real cameras, backdrop in our studio. And they said, absolutely not, it's never gonna work. You know, they had their own agenda of wanting to be UGC, very short form, very quick and snappy. And we uploaded our first segment, which was Finish the Lyric, which is basically exactly what it sounds. We play a song, we cut it off, we have the two influencers try to finish the lyric. And the first upload we did, posted on Friday. By Monday, it had, I think, 20 million views. And on Monday, the same person we met at TikTok on Friday emailed us and said, we don't know what you're doing, but keep fucking doing it. And so have been doing that ever since. But just a little bit of that was, so that was our first kind of like aha moment of this is what Flight House is. And so that was really when the Flight House that you see now was born.
It's so interesting because I hear that story, and we always used to say this about Zuckerberg when we were trying to cut through Facebook algorithms. It's like whatever Facebook want doesn't necessarily mean that's what they get.
Yeah.
Right? So they can say they want all this stuff, but then you look at the data and all this other stuff is performing. Mm-hmm. So you kind of have to build your strategy around what you see, not what you're told.
Exactly.
And that's what you guys obviously did. But then equally you hear that story, and I can't remember the name of the publisher, but they basically built this whole business on Facebook. They got up to $100 million in revenue. They had over $1 billion in valuation. And overnight, Facebook just decided they were going to rug pull that publisher. Mm-hmm. And that was it. They lost all their revenue. They lost 95% of their revenue. They had to fire all their staff. They closed up shop all within 12 months. From $100 million in revenue to zero because Zuck woke up and decided, nah, I'm going to actually turn the nozzle on that.
They don't have an audience.
Yeah. So what's in the back of your head? Does that scare you?
You know, it does. We're always trying to diversify. I think I have no interest in building our own app or anything like that where we can actually own our own audience.
Why?
But I've just never seen it really. It's such a big lift, and I just don't know that our audience wants that right now. And
another app in this.
Another time. App, yeah.
Well, you need to come up with an idea that makes it super sticky, that's unique. Yeah. Otherwise,
it's
they're not
going to
come.
It's just another place
exactly,
to go.
Exactly, yeah.
But, you know, we're diversifying at least in other platforms as they come up. You know, we're testing them all out. We're seeing a lot of success. Have grown, I think, like a few thousand percent since last year on YouTube, thanks to Shorts. So that's been going really well. Then also in terms of diversifying our own and operated brand. So we started with Flight House. Then we acquired Teenager Therapy, which is the number one Gen Z mental health podcast. Was started by six teenagers in like south of LA. And that is still kind of going. We're figuring out now. They've all aged out. So now we're figuring out what the next iteration of Teenager Therapy is. But that we had Prince Harry and Meghan Markle, like they'd reached out to us to be on the podcast. And so seeing some success there. Then most recently we launched Retirement House, which is exactly what it sounds like. It's a content house that we have six senior citizens in doing TikTok dances. So we always are kind of have our feet in a few different things and always looking at what's next in terms of content.
Retirement House is one project that you have that I'm super excited about. Because I know that you are very good at finding stars within your business and empowering them and giving them autonomy over a project. And that's how Retirement House was born.
Yeah.
So tell us more about who taught you to, or perhaps where that came from, that empowerment with a safety net kind of thing. But then also, how does Retirement House work? Like, you've got these old people doing TikTok challenges. Where did they come from? How did your person who you empowered run that?
Yeah. So for the first question, I think when I started at Create, I had absolutely no oversight, and there was either you're like sink or swim. It was either I find something that I can provide value to the company with, or I leave. And the amount of trust that I was given and the amount of, you know, trust slash, you know, Create was also a startup and didn't have their shit together either. And so it was a little bit of trust, a little bit of, we don't really know anything that's going on in the company. But luckily I was able to turn that around and make it something that worked. And I think it's just in having the right people around and people that you can trust. And I think that's one of my biggest strengths is hiring people and surrounding us with the best possible people, not people that no one I work with feels like they're, you know, very LA or they don't want to be going to like the flashy parties and events and just being seen with the right people. They just want to make good content, like do good work and make stuff that we're all proud of and we get to have fun while we're doing it. And so always looking to hire people like that. And that's really what happened with Retirement House. So Adi, who is one of the co-founders of Retirement House, he actually was responsible for bringing in Flayhouse's first ever actual revenue. So that first year, we lost $1 million experimenting with content. Second year, our gross revenue was like 400K, and that was 100% due to a D. He was running the music marketing agency side, which was kind of where we first started making any money. He came to me and said, Ash, I don't want to do this anymore. I hate working on the agency side. And I didn't want him to leave, so it was like, what do you want to do? Let's fucking figure it out and let's do it. So he came, played the Shark Tank theme song and asked for $12,000 to invest into this idea of, at the time it was a little bit more like Jersey Shore meets Retirement House, where it was more scripted and less, like we were building out characters. We actually, as the characters, we all sat and took like Myers-Briggs personality tests to like try to figure out how they would interact with each other and stuff. None of that actually went anywhere, but it was a ton of fun coming up with all of it. And that, the rest just kind of is history. So we cast that. So we just put out casting call. So made it really, really easy because something that we've seen with actual content houses with influencers, where it gets hard is that those are all people that are trying to, you know, share followings and revenue. And it becomes very difficult to figure out, okay, I'm more valuable to this group than I am. And so we've cut that out and the talent is all just paid day rates. And so then when we do a brand shoot, they're paid a bigger day rate, but it's very, very clear cut of the ownership. And then
it's also really smart commercially too, because if you come up with a format or a show that really blows up, you own the IP. It's not dependent on any one specific personality or talent.
Yeah.
You know, they leave, great, let's get somebody else in. And it's now becomes a business you can sell and a business that has equity value.
Yeah. And that's what we're wanting to do and like focus on. It's hard. We don't want to kind of build any brands that are based solely on one person. And that's, I think, we saw with Flayhouse that over the years, all these influencers getting canceled for one thing or another. And sure, we've had some of them on Flayhouse, but them getting canceled didn't have any negative effect on our business. And Retirement House, our first cast, I think we had four of them. Two of them we ended up getting rid of very quickly. And luckily, you know, we were able to just keep it going. And I think we'll see the same thing moving forward, is that it's not reliant on... Dude, it makes me so sad thinking about how old they are, though. And like,
God, no.
Yeah. Because the oldest one, Mabel, is 86 years old, and she's like the spryest of all of them. But, dude, we go to her birthday parties, and then I'm just like, oh my God, I don't ever want to have to replace you. Because, like,
not another birthday party. Yeah. I know what that means. Yeah. I think I had a grandmother that lived to 82. Like, oh, she's doing so good.
Yeah. Dude, one of them can do the splits. It's like crazy. Yeah.
I love that.
But they're really, a couple of them were just working actors, and then one of them is the co-founder's friend's grandmother. So her husband had just died recently, was kind of just looking for something to keep herself busy with, and he was like, oh, why don't you audition for this? And she had no idea what she was getting herself into, but I think it's brought a lot of joy to them and to us. It's very, very fulfilling for all of us.
So tell me then how Lil Nas X and Miley Cyrus and Doja Cat come into all of this.
Yes.
Building these shows, you have these incredible talent, you got these huge platforms. How do artists fit into this?
Yeah. So really there's like these two main parts of the business. There's the forward-facing content brands and owned and operated brands like Flayhouse, Retirement House, Teenager Therapy. And then on the other side, we have our like white label agency work. And that's what started making, honestly, long-term, who knows if we're going to keep doing that forever. Our priorities are building more owned IP, but as we're going to keep doing it as long as it keeps bringing in revenue on the agency side. And so we, because of our relationship, all of us basically came from music and Create Music Group, obviously, is a music company. So we had a lot of connections in the music space, music side of things. And so when we were trying to figure out how to make money, that was just the first thought was, first, we were going, you know, door to door with these labels and trying to explain to them, you know, in 2018, I think, like, why they should give us any money to promote music on this app they've never even heard of. And, you know, there was some, Warner in particular was definitely one of the earlier adapters. There was, you know, we were in touch with the right person that was able to convince someone else to, like, green light giving us some money. The first campaign we ever ran was for Marshmello and Anne Marie's song called Friends. And that one was just
huge song.
Yeah, thanks to Flighthouse.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
No, that was a great song. It was going to do great without us. But that was our first real, like, proof of like success. And
what did you do for them?
So we came up with a trend, like this was lots of dances at the time. So I think they some kind of dance, and we identified the influencers, and then we just ran it A to Z. So we came up with it, reached out to the influencers, negotiated rates with them, got their videos up, and just kind of went from there. And then slow, like the first year of that was so uphill trying to get convinced labels to give us any money. Then I think Lil Nas X broke, and he was the first real big success story in the industry that suddenly everyone was open to giving us money. We didn't necessarily break that one song for Lil Nas X, but we got involved a lot of what we do, especially now, because it's harder to, you know, break songs from scratch than it was in 2020. Is that we'll get involved when a song's already showing, like, momentum. Yeah. And so we'll get tapped into by the label just to kind of add some more, like, fuel to the fire. And so with Lil Nas X, we worked a few songs of his, and it's been mostly, like, hey, we see this moving. Let's try some other creatives and see if we can keep it going. Miley Cyrus was a really interesting one, actually. That one was, I don't know if you guys remember, it was 2020, sometime during the pandemic, but she had this song we were pushing. I think the album was called Plastic Hearts. And it was somehow organically this started where someone made a video and they were like, if Miley Cyrus comments on this, I will dye my hair, or I'll cut my hair, I'll name my child, so whatever she says. And so we saw that happening organically, and we went to her team and we're like, guys, like, let's ramp this up. And so we were able to get her team to, you know, to get Miley to comment on lots and lots and lots of TikToks. And that just blew the song up because people were really just wanting to get her engagement. That was one of our first kind of partnerships with the brand, because we saw the success, saw the opportunity for a brand to get involved. And the first brand that said yes was Chipotle. And so we had...
Did they pay Miley Cyrus to be involved, or was it a contra thing?
It was a mutual kind of thing.
Yeah.
So that one, they posted a TikTok on, because Chipotle was crushing it at the time on TikTok as well. And so they posted, if Miley Cyrus comments on this video, and all these song videos were using her song, obviously, if she comments on this video, we'll name a burrito after her. And so she commented, and like, then they made, you know, on their app, you could get like the Miley Cyrus burrito. And so that was one of our, you know, definitely a really cool out of the box kind of activation.
How hard is it to make that kind of synergy between brand and artist, or artist and album campaign, song campaign, look really organic? Like, I'm thinking of that Gail song, mm-hmm. ABCDFU, yeah. And how smart music fans are now. Like, they saw that someone commented, do a song about the alphabet, and then they stalked that person and it turned out to be someone that worked at her label. Uh-huh. And they were like, okay, fake. Obviously, she denies that it was fake and said that it was...
All the conspiracies come out that she's a plant.
Yeah, I mean, it was literally like the digital marketing person from the label. So, but...
I mean, whatever. Anyone that
is
has
there a
marketing...
Secret? Is there a secret to making sure that the fans don't, like, use their spidey senses?
I think it's fine, like, to be transparent with the fans. Like, this is a business. This is... Marketing is part of it. If you... I don't know... I think you do yourself as an artist like a disservice to try to pull a fast one on your fans, you know. And if you can be transparent, I think Taylor Swift is a great example of, you know, she has so much going on behind the scenes. She's too smart that, like, obviously everyone doesn't know everything she's doing, but she's as transparent as one could be at her size, I think. And it really feeds that parasocial relationship that she has with her fans. And I think we saw with Halsey last year that she was kind of upset vocally with her label about them wanting her to push on TikTok. But I think what we're going to see is the artists that are going to be really successful in this space moving forward are going to be the ones that get it, that get that this is part of the game. Like, I think Lil Nas X is a great example. Like, he truly, truly gets it. He's making music that is for TikTok and knows how to do the trends and participate, and it's very authentic. But that's because he knows what he's doing. Mm-hmm. It's going to come across, like, ingenuine if it's someone that is not on the apps already and they're just being forced to kind of.
So it's okay to not get involved in TikTok if it's not, it's like second nature to you, like it is.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's going to be doing yourself a disservice in the landscape right now. That is an upper hand to be able to, you know, speak to TikTok authentically. But obviously, artists can still break through without it. But I think it's better for an artist to not participate at all than for them to, like, appear like a boomer, you know, and trying to participate.
One of the video content pieces that I love that you create, as a music fan, as a journalist who just wants to know the inside of every single fucking lyric, is the content that you make for Genius. Mm-hmm. So how did that come about?
Yeah, so not sure how much I can talk about, like, the back end of that business deal, but basically Genius was acquired by a company called MediaShare over the past few years. MediaShare also recently acquired WorldStar. They acquire websites that have a ton of traffic so that they can place the ads on them themselves. So they'd already partnered with Create on WorldStar distribution. So Create kind of powers the label side of that for them. And then when they acquired Genius, they had no interest in continuing the content. They just cared about the website and the lyrics. And so we partnered with them in a similar fashion where we're fully responsible at Flighthouse for filming all of the content. We just have a revenue share with them for anything that goes up on the YouTube. And that includes, you know, we have just one person that's kind of transitioned over, but we're filming that in the same studio that we do all of Flighthouse content as well.
And then obviously that's a very successful format. Do you have certain things that you know are just working? I struggle to hear from digital marketing masters who say, this is what's popping off on TikTok. This is the kind of content that you need to make, because I feel like it is so much led by the consumer and so much led by the fans. Mm-hmm. What are your most successful formats? I'm hoping that our listeners can learn something from them. Maybe there's a common thread. I don't know.
I don't think there's a common thread. I think it's just you have to just be in it and be paying attention and be able to move and be agile. And because there's stuff that comes up, you know, different formats and styles of editing, or, you know, whether it's a dance or a sketch or it's, you know, I think something that works, a through line that I've seen work, not always in the same way, but it's like weird juxtaposition. That's why I think Retirement House worked really well. It's, you know, you're seeing these senior citizens doing these TikTok dances that you don't expect. Our next step of season 3 for them is going to be, instead of having them in this big mansion, we're going to have them in an actual retirement house setting. And so that's this next level of that juxtaposition of senior citizens in a retirement house doing these TikTok dances. On Flighthouse, we've seen success where if it's like, you know, a big tattooed rapper that's doing a Taylor Swift finish the lyric, you know, stuff like that, that just kind of catches your eye and you're like, what am I about to see? That is going to automatically kind of keep the audience there a little bit. I think we're seeing just everything is getting shorter and shorter and quicker and snappier, but really is just paying attention to what, like you said, what the audience and what the kids on the app are doing, and just how do I replicate that for my music, my brand. You know, we saw the singing in cars, we saw singing in elevators, singing in stairwells, you know, that's a big thing. Lots and lots of things that are just, honestly, I've personally never had an original idea in my life, and I don't think most people on TikTok have either.
Most people in life don't. Yeah. It's all iterative of the previous people's work.
So just pay attention to what's working and just do that, but like in your own way.
So you've got 100 staff. Mm-hmm. That's what, $10 million in salaries a year? That's a lot of, there's a big budget, right? So you're making, you would have a huge amount of expenses. Where's your revenue at right now?
So this year we should do between 25 and 30 million.
And if I think about, that's a lot of revenue. And I'm thinking about the kind of clients you have, which are labels and publishers. Both are typically pretty bad payers in terms of their budget sizes. Mm-hmm. How does that make sense? How do you guys make that much revenue with those kind of clients? And what are the average, like, what are the average sort of budgets that these artists are paying you guys?
So on the music side, they are pretty small. You know, we try to have a campaign minimum of like 15K.
US dollars?
US dollars. Then that goes up and down. You know, we have some, if it's a client that we really, really want, we'll go down to 5 just to kind of test stuff out. But what we've seen is that anything under 15K just doesn't do enough and the client's not going to be happy with it.
And is that budget purely for your creative execution, or is it also
that's for the influencer costs?
You engage influencers and do all of that for that budget, and you coordinate all of that. That doesn't include any performance money on top or anything like that?
No. Then, you know, we've seen the biggest spenders on the music side are going to be the songs that are already popping. We've gone up to 6-figure budgets for those, but that's typically, they'll start with 15K, and then as it keeps working, they just keep putting more and more money onto it. But really, the majority of Flyhouse's revenue is coming from our brand partnerships. Those are the 6-7-figure deals that we have that are, you know, just one of those deals takes us over the edge in terms of our revenue. Mm. So we're doing a lot of brand deals into the Flyhouse content. We also are managing TikTok accounts for other brands. We manage the FX network, like the TV station, their TikTok. We launched the Elf Cosmetics TikTok account. We're bringing on, I kind of sort of poached, he was leaving anyway, but the guy who was running the Lionsgate TikTok, which is like our North Star, their TikTok is amazing. Everyone should check it out for inspo for what even just like their artists should be doing. But he's going to be able to bring the Lionsgate business to us in the new year as well. So that's what I think. Something that I'm interested in growing more in the business is more of these TV show entertainment brands, because it's less of a lift for us. We don't have to make original content. We just need to take existing content and turn it into a TikTok trend. So there is a special sauce there, but it's a little bit easier than needing to go out and film hundreds of viral videos.
Mm. So a major label gives you $15,000. How do you make any money from that? Going out, getting all these influencers, you've got 100 staff. I don't understand how there's margin there.
Yeah. So on the influencer stuff, you know, we do have a pretty lean team there, and we work with a lot of influencers that, you know, we come back to over and over again. Transparently there, we go for just like a 30% margin and work with that what we can.
Are you transparent with the labels on how much you're spending on all the influencers?
Yeah, different labels, we have like a little bit of different conversations, but whenever someone wants that transparency, we're totally fine with that. It's almost better for us if we are transparent, because then we can just guarantee the 30%. Mm-hmm. But that's, I think, one of our biggest strengths or reason that we've been successful is that I'm all about transparency with clients, partners, with our own employees. You know, everyone really sees the revenue sheet and knows where we're at and knows that, you know, anything that I'm pushing them for to hit revenue-wise isn't just because, like, I want a new car or something like that. It's, you know, it's paying for our bills and it's no one's, you know, if tomorrow like an email leaked to the whole company that shared everyone's salaries, that would be a bummer, but there's no one on there that I would be like stressed about how they would feel about it. I think everything's very, very fair.
And so you're part of the Craig Music Group, which is a really fast growing company. Are they raising money at the moment? So they are. Okay. And can you share what valuation they're raising at?
I'm not sure if this is like current or what is going to happen, but I know John, the CEO of Create, would love to raise that $1 billion valuation. So
he's shooting for $1 billion, might get close. That's enormous, right? Flighthouse within that, and I understand there's a lot of music tech in Create Music, yeah, which is probably why they're getting great multiples. Flighthouse to me feels like it's like the modern day MTV.
Mm-hmm.
If MTV was starting from today, like this is the business that they would build. MTV would be worth a lot less than $1 billion. Like, I mean, BuzzFeed right now, their market cap's 60 million.
Yep.
I imagine MTV is a lot less than that. Have you guys thought about going and acquiring a legacy IP like that and going, right, we're going to just bring that in and become,
mm-hmm,
you know, and just do what you're doing now, but with this like, yeah, sort of iconic legacy IP?
Yeah, so not in as far as like an actual acquisition, but recently we're in conversation with the Arena Group, which owns Sports Illustrated, and looking to partner with them. An interesting scenario of we're partnering as well as them kind of just paying us to make some of this content. But we recently launched Fieldhouse, which is our sports-focused brand. Basically looks exactly like Flighthouse, same types of games, but there are questions about sports instead. And so that... like that's going to be the lowest hanging fruit for this partnership with Sports Illustrated, where it'll just be, you know, Fieldhouse. On one side we have like the Flighthouse logo, on the other side we have Sports Illustrated. So that would be just co-published. Flighthouse would own the brand, but we would just do like a 50-50 rep share. And then we would be outside of that creating all of the content and short form assets and influencer partnerships for Sports Illustrated and their other legacy brands as well.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely interested to see. I think I'm almost hesitant about the acquisitions because with how the content in the space works right now, you can start from zero and have videos pop off the next day. You don't need to have this like following or this legacy name anymore. And so is it better to, you know, start higher up, but you're kind of working against whatever algorithm issues you're having, or should you just start from ground, like from nothing?
Well, I wonder about like the brand partnerships to that. Like, would a brand partner with someone who's got no following rather than a legacy brand like MTV, mm-hmm, perhaps? That would be my only thing that would tick you over as a brand to go, okay, I trust this brand. It's been around since the 80s.
Yeah.
Okay.
But then, I mean, they're not very successfully lately.
Yeah, are you partnering? Do you want the brand or do you want the engagement?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So our own experience is our business is 6 years old. For the first, I want to say 3 years, we felt like, and maybe Australia's a different market, but we felt like we were crushing it. We had millions of users. We grew it from 100,000 users when we acquired some brands to millions of Australians. Engagement was blitzing all of News Corp, all of the ABC, like, mm-hmm, we were just crushing it, and we couldn't get a dollar through the door, and it was, mm-hmm, really frustrating us because like the CMOs and the agencies, they just kind of didn't know who we are. So yeah, you got numbers, so does Murdoch, whatever, and we just couldn't get any money. Then we went and did a deal with Rolling Stone, and we were the exact same business. We didn't, yep, change shit about us. We just had, now we were going to the meetings with Rolling Stone,
yeah,
and fucking money flooded through the door.
Yeah.
And so I think as like young founders like us, I think the mistake that the lesson I learned was that is underestimating the power of legacy brand. Yeah. I don't think the users give a fuck.
Yeah.
But I think the CMOs and the agency people care, and they, yeah, you know, if they're going to sign multiple seven-figure deals, they need to really trust you. And yeah, so having a Rolling Stone logo or an MTV logo or whatever accelerates that trust.
Yeah.
Like it fast tracks that sales cycle 2 years to like 3 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm interested to see how that works with Sports Illustrated. With like on the other side of that though, with Genius, I was kind of expecting the same thing, that we would be like, just as easy as we're selling Flighthouse, if we add Genius to the mix, then it should just, you know, exponentially move things along. But our sales partner, IF7, who's been bringing us in, they're ex-Viacom, and so have all of the, like, high-level agency relationships. When I brought to them, like, the opportunity to sell against Genius, they were like, to be honest, everyone we're talking to wants, you know, something new and like leading. And that's how we sell Flight House, is that, you know, there's no one else like Flight House right now. And maybe Genius, this is just coming from what they told me.
This is why I fucking love America. It's very different to this territory. That's great. That's awesome territory. Yeah. It's an awesome different mindset, I guess.
And I was surprised to hear that. And because I was expecting we'd be able to, you know, sell against that instantly. And, but yeah, just, I guess it's not as forward thinking and new and fresh as it was, you know, a few years ago.
So, okay. I feel like we're, you know, it's a very different Fear the Top episode here because we run similar companies.
Yeah.
So I'll lean on kind of my own experience and my own analysis. Like, as we're building the business, I was looking around the world and I was saying that publishers can't really survive, new publishers, long-term at least, unless they do advertising and marketing and something else.
Yeah.
So it's and e-commerce, it's and events, it's and venture capital, it's and whatever. Like, they have something that they're leveraging their audience outside of just selling straight ads to them.
Yeah.
Our business chose to go the events route. So we are an events business, probably more so than we are a publisher. Are you thinking about your and?
Yeah. I think a little bit of both the event and the e-commerce side. I think, you know, something like Teenager Therapy, which we own the trademark for, you know, the audience is very small and very dedicated, but it doesn't even matter in my opinion, because I think just that Teenager Therapy branding, there's so much opportunity to do like a one of those guided journals, and just like seeing that on an Instagram ad or on Amazon, like you're, I want to have, you know, the Amazon end of the year teen gift guide that, you know, your parents are looking at and trying to figure out what to buy for their kids. And stuff like that, as well as, you know, there's a subscription box model that could work there, you know, just sending out this guided journal, like a candle that for stress or something like that all kind of fits in with this. Teenager Therapy also, I think there's a big crossover with some of these, we're seeing these artists, indie artists, a lot of these kids from TikTok that are just so much more open with their mental health struggles. And so I think there could be, I don't know if you guys are familiar with 88 Rising's Head in the Clouds Festival, which focuses on like Asian artists and like that kind of direction. But if we were to do some sort of Teenager Therapy Festival that had, you know, all of these artists that are, you know, coming up on TikTok and very open about their mental health, and maybe in between like the sets, we have speakers like from this teenage mental wellness space kind of talk about something or another. I think there's some interesting angles there. And I just want to get into the like CPG space, not as part of any of our
CPG means
consumer product goods or something like that.
Packaged goods, yes. Which is what? Sorry, just explain what that is.
Just like, so just any kind of product that people are going to need to rebuy and that you can sell it to them over and over again.
For example?
Like razors or, right. Yeah, there you go.
That's a good one.
It's
like a quiz.
Yeah.
This is the quiz part of the podcast. And you're doing great.
So, you know, I want, because right now we're getting all these brands paying us to promote their products. And so why not us promote our own product? And, you know, I want to find some kind of product that makes for visually good content. So an example that I found, I don't think we're going to like lean into this one, but there's this brand called Bleem, and they make this hair eraser, and it's just some kind of like exfoliator thing. I bought it and it works perfectly, but it makes you just like, the videos are great. You can do it in real time. You can rub it and it erases your hair.
The visual is cool.
Yeah. And so something like that just is very visual, that you can film over and over again. And, you know, just like Liquid Death, they just fucking repackaged water and made it cool again. And so I think finding something like that is really more in like the marketing and branding and how do we make that cool content. And I think what Flight House has compared to any other agency or even publisher, maybe less a publisher but definitely agency, is that influencers think Flight House is cool still. You know, they hit us up, they're like, I released my new single, can me and my friends come to the Flight House office and like hang out? And like, they'll come, they're like, can I use a backdrop just to like shoot some content really quick? And so we haven't really leveraged that at all yet, because we just want to keep it very like organic and authentic. But once we kind of figure out what this product is going to be, I think then we'll be able to really tap into this audience that we have and of our followers, as well as our influencer kind of connections.
It'd be fun if you did products like were clearly tied to your brands. Like, yeah. I know that it's not a travel company, but if you did like travel size things,
you gotta
reimburse those all the time. Yeah. Always rebuying those.
Yeah.
And there's two ways you can go about it, I think. You can start, like, create your own product, get it manufactured, branded yourself, whatever, and then handle all the e-commerce and all that yourself. Or you can take a venture capital model where you go to a company like Liquid Death and you say, hey, you're raising a Series A. We're going to invest $100,000 in your Series A, but we'll also give you $500,000 worth of marketing.
Yeah.
So you give us $600,000 worth of equity. Mm-hmm. And now you don't have to worry about running that consumer product.
Yeah.
You can just handle the marketing and all the costs, and you get all this equity in the deal.
Yeah.
So there's kind of like a, have you thought about which kind of way you would go?
You know, until you brought that up the other day, I really hadn't thought about it from that direction, because I know we're really big on like ownership right now. And so, but at the same time, I'm never wanting to just recreate the wheel. So if I know there's people out there and companies that have already done what we're trying to do, and so why should I figure it out from scratch? So really, really open to kind of both. Maybe we'll try it simultaneously.
A little bit of everything.
Yeah. It's interesting because I think it's so fucking hard to like build your own products and handle manufacturing and do all of that. It's a whole different org chart. It's a whole thing. So the venture route is a bit of a hack, but you know, regardless of what people think of their content, the people that are a publisher that does their own products, own their own products really well, is the Daily Wire. They have all those, like, anytime there's a sort of like woke thing that happens, they make the anti-woke version of that, whether it's chocolate or razors or whatever, and they fucking cream with that shit. So there is a case study out there where a publisher can make their own stuff and do that well.
Dude, I have like my tinfoil hat on for this conspiracy, but I don't know if you guys have seen on TikTok these past few weeks that it's someone like filming in their dorm. They're like, I'm going to make lobster in my dorm. And it's this instant pot that he just like cracks open a lobster, cooks it all up. And the videos are getting like tens of 20 million views. And I started looking further into it and I'm like, is this guy fucking a company? Like, is but I don't think he is, because I was really deep diving Reddit trying to figure out who this guy was, and he started with drop shipping. So I think his video just went viral and someone told him he could like get, he should be selling it. So then the brand of the product used in his videos was different than the ones that were getting drop shipped. And now he has an Amazon affiliate link that he's pushing, but like, that's what I want to do. I want to do that, but on purpose. And I don't think he did this on purpose. I think he just got lucky, but that's what I want to do.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
Genius. I think there are so many people that are going to listen to this that are going to see what you're doing and have done in the music space, and they're going to think, how can I work with Flighthouse? So this is your first time in Australia. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you've met a lot of Australian music industry people here at Big Sound. That's what it's all about, networking. How can the music industry get in touch with you and tap into Flighthouse?
I mean, just email me. But yeah, I think open to
Do you want to give out your email?
Sure. Just ash@flight.house. No.com, very easy. Mm-hmm. But yeah, open to any conversations. I think it, in terms of actually working on a campaign, you need to have a realistic expectation of what you're kind of going after. And it's not that we wouldn't run smaller budget campaigns. We just don't think that they're not successful, and then no one's happy with the end results. If we run a 5K campaign, then, you know, usually the people that have the smallest budgets are the ones that have the most to lose and are, you know, really need that money to work for them. And I don't know that putting it on a TikTok campaign out the door is like the smartest way to go about it. Maybe start with like a safer bet, and then once something's actually moving, that's when you put the money onto the Flighthouse TikTok fire.
That's good advice.
What's the biggest mistake you made as a CEO?
I think this was kind of like an ongoing thing for a few months, but just as, you know, this is my first job, this is my first time being CEO, so I've learned really on the ground, just like on the go. I think for a long time, we had some employees that just weren't a good fit culturally, and I took it upon myself to make it about me and look much more introspectively of like, what can I do differently to make them a better fit? And that ended up just, you know, dragging things on for months to years in some cases. And that ended up, you know, negatively having this negative energy of this these employees that just aren't a good fit ends up being a huge detriment to everyone else in the team. So like, I was basically, because I wasn't man enough to kind of just cut the ties sooner, if because I thought I could fix it, I forced the rest of the team to have to deal with this as well, which was just not fair.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah. And it is kind of ironic because you're like, I care so much for this person that I'm trying to work out how I can help and what I can do. But what you need to be doing is caring about all the other people that are suffering because of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that, I think that's been my biggest learning lesson. And I think once I was able to get past that, and now I'm more able to be like, hey, it's not me, it's not you, it's just that like, you don't fit what Flighthouse is right now. Let's try to find some ways to work together outside of Flighthouse. That's been, and just being able to move more quickly has been
you fly fast now.
Yeah, fire fast.
Yeah.
And not even, the idea of firing fast, yes, but I think we've also just done a better job of early on identifying if they're going to be a good fit. So we don't even fire that often. It's just identifying the people that are going to be in for the long haul. And if they, not necessarily firing fast first, but repositioning them, like if they're a good fit culturally, let's maybe try something else they can do within the company.
We're just moving more quickly.
I want to give a huge credit to Tom from Big Sound for bringing you out.
Yes.
Because you're a fucking weapon. And when we had drinks the other day, I was just so blown away with the business you built and how you think about content and what you're doing for artists all over the world. Can you finish up today telling us the thing that you're most proud of?
Yeah, I mean, same breath as what I just said. I think what I'm most proud of is the team and the culture that we've built at Flighthouse. I interviewed someone that we are ending up hiring, and he, after our interview, he emailed me and said that, you know, to me, like, the best work should feel like play, and leaving Flighthouse, that's what I got out of it. And I was like, damn, that's one of the best things anyone could ever say about us. And I think, you know, we go show up, do this every single day for the rest of our lives. We spend so much time with the people that we work with. And I think the culture that we've built and the amount of fun, and we like work hard, play hard, and get shit done at this super high level. But it still feels like half the time I don't know what I'm doing, and no one really does. But we've built this culture that allows for people to make mistakes and for people to have fun and for us to try new things and be really, really open and collaborative. And I think that's the best thing I could have ever built.
Ash, as media owners, we are in huge admiration for everything you build at Flighthouse. You're very inspirational, and we are so grateful you came on Fear at the Top. Thank you.
Thank you, Ash.
Yes, you guys are amazing. I'm blushing.